Hello, friends, and welcome back to Undaunted with Robert Swan and NTT Data. I'm Dan Smith, and I have just recently come back myself from 11 days at the Undaunted Base Camp in Antarctica. I'm recording this on January 6th back home in North Texas, and I'm glad to report that the expedition is underway. Robert Swan and three colleagues have been making steady progress walking to the South Pole and have 30 nautical miles to go, which will take several days to complete. They had to start earlier than planned due to weather, which is always a wild card in Antarctica. The original plan was to fly out from Union Glacier Camp on December 26th, using a Twin Otter ski plane to reach their starting point. But on December 23rd, it became clear that they needed to fly sooner, or they could be delayed for many days. So they left on Christmas Eve and woke up on the Antarctic Plateau on Christmas Day, just a bit less than 100 miles from the South Pole. According to their daily audio reports, weather conditions have been quite brutal, mostly thanks to an intense wind in their faces. Today, the weather turned and they are taking a rest day to repair equipment and enjoy what is a pleasant day by Antarctic Plateau standards, just negative 27 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 32 Celsius, with the sun peeking through patchy cloud cover. You can hear Robert's audio reports for yourself at the Undaunted web app. Just type 2041partnership.nttdata.com into your browser. Just that. Don't put www or anything. Just 2041partnership.nttdata.com. When you get to the homepage, click the expedition button to see the tracker map and scroll down for the audio reports. Now, let's not forget that Robert is 66 years old, and by his own admission, he's too old to be doing this stuff, as if age would stop him. His three fellow expeditioners are field guide Rob Smith, 28-year-old son Barney Swan, and his videographer and world-class guide and adventurer Kyle O'Donohue. While I was in Antarctica, and before the Undaunted expeditioners left base camp, I had the chance to chat with Rob, Barney, and Kyle, and I'll share those conversations with you in this episode. We'll begin by talking with Rob Smith about adventuring in general, something Rob knows about, considering that he's scaled Mount Everest a lucky 7 times, among other exploits. Then Barney reveals expectations for the walk ahead. And finally, I had a moment with Kyle shortly before they boarded the plane on Christmas Eve. One last thing before we begin. If you have surmised that controlled conditions are an oxymoron in Antarctica, you are correct. Even recording podcasts there presents stiff challenges. It's hard to find a spot at Union Glacier that's quiet for very long. For example, you'll hear a snowplow passing by at the end of my interview with Rob Smith, and in my chat with Barney, the ties on my tent kept banging in the wind. But it's all just part of the atmosphere, and I hope you enjoy it. Here's Rob Smith. We're here with Rob Smith with the Union Glacier team. Rob, can you describe your livelihood?
I work as a professional mountain guide and polar guide, and I'm on expedition for 6 months of the year. 3 months of that is usually in Antarctica.
And what is your role with the Undaunted expedition?
So I'm going to be skiing with Rob Swan, Kyle and Barney to South Pole. And right now, they have a larger team here, including yourself, and we're just trying to facilitate all those needs for filming and travel and everything else before we actually set out on the ski trip.
And you seem to be uniquely qualified for this experience, given the fact that you have climbed to the summit of Mount Everest 7 times, I believe.
Yeah.
Why do you do that? There's the famous phrase, because it's there. But what is it that inspired you to take on such a task?
I think there's an innate drive in all of us to look around the corner, you know, to open the door, to see what's next. And I guess for me, it's just a bit stronger than normal. And maybe that's what's taken me on this path, really. Just one thing led to another, and I always wanted to go somewhere further, somewhere higher, somewhere colder.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done the seven summits, or are you?
Yeah, I've been successful on six of the seven summits, and I climbed Denali, but turned around on the summit plateau to bring a climber down from the top. So yeah, I'll need to go back there.
Right. How many times have you been to the South Pole? Seven times to the top of Everest, but how many times to the South Pole?
So I've done two full distance ski trips to the pole, one from the Ronny Ice Shelf, one from the Ross Ice Shelf, and sort of met in the middle. And Last Degrees, to be honest, I've lost count, I'm not too sure.
And the Last Degree is for you at the 89th?
Correct, 89th.
And you take 60 nautical miles to the pole.
Maybe seven or eight of those over the years.
So you're quite familiar with the South Pole.
I am, yeah, yeah.
Have you gone any place that's not cold?
My wife would probably like to answer that, but my specialty seems to be cold and high altitude. In the past, you know, I did some desert travel and rainforest, but really this is my niche now.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about the South Pole and the top of Mount Everest or mm-hmm. Denali or other places, mountains, what are the similarities and what are the key differences between a mountaintop and the Antarctic plateau where the South Pole is?
I think the similarities are we're not supposed to be there, you know. Whether that's at high altitude, there's no permanent towns above whatever 4,000 meters, mm-hmm. you know. So people just are not physiologically adapted to live above that, and it's the same as the polar plateau. You know, there's no resident population in Antarctica apart from the science communities. There's never been a population, native population, and it's just because life is not sustainable in those conditions.
And is there a difference in how you spend your day? Because, you know, you're climbing, it seems mm-hmm. like every few feet is something different. On the Antarctic plateau, it's
There are
seemingly the same thing.
There are big differences in how you approach a journey like that. On the mountain, you have to acclimatize in stages, and between mm-hmm. those stages you rest down in base camp.
Because of the oxygen supply in
correct,
the air?
Correct, correct, okay. And your body takes time to adapt. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the polar plateau, the scale of those journeys just means that you have to travel every day as long as you can. You know, there are thresholds in the weather, but it's more relentless on the polar plateau because you have to do it hour after hour, day after day, week after week to mm-hmm. actually make progress to get to the South Pole.
And we had actually talked a little bit yesterday about the what would strike me as the monotony of walking across the plateau mm-hmm. the same direction day after day. But
yes.
You had mentioned that there are perhaps subtle differences, but there's beauty, unique types of beauty mm-hmm. along the way. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What you mean by the subtleties of the scenery?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, for me, it's a beautiful place to be. And I think you just have to look for a little bit more detail in the landscape and the environment, you know, whether that's shades of blue, the surface texture of the snow, the shape of the sastrugi. There's a lot of detail, you just have to get your eye in and notice that.
Sastrugi are the ice formations formed by the wind, is that
yeah,
right?
Correct, yeah, it's a Russian term, sastrugi, for those wind-carved ridges in the snow. Yeah, and you get all different sort of shapes and forms and sizes. And the
Inuit heights.
Heights, yeah. You'll get sastrugi the height of this tent
wow.
in some places.
That's probably 10, 12 feet maybe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And the Inuit have, I can't remember, it's over 20 different words for sastrugi, you know. My
wow.
favorite is shaped like a duck's head. You know, it's a classic curve.
Right.
You know,
it's
neat.
Fascinating. Out of all of your adventures, what do you think is the most memorable moment for you?
I've had many, many opportunities, so lots of moments fall into that category. You know, the first time skiing to the South Pole, reaching the South Pole is momentous. Mm-hmm. Likewise, standing on top of Everest and seeing the curvature of the earth below you mm-hmm. is, you know, mind-blowing. I summited K2 for the second time last year, which wasn't the original trip objective. You know, so to go there twice and then stand on the summit 5 weeks later, it was just like, this is unbelievable, mm-hmm. you know. So I've had many, many moments, and yeah, they're all fantastic.
And now you're about to enter a brand new, entirely different kind of adventure. You have a child on the way, or?
Yeah, it's actually my first son's birthday today.
Ah.
He was born the solstice, which is quite nice. And yeah, we have a second son due in the 1st of April now, so okay. That's the the next adventure.
And your wife is an adventurer herself, is that correct? Yep. You had talked about splitting the time here in Union Glacier or something?
Correct. We actually met in Antarctica. We were both working for ALE at the time. And this season, we had considered trying to do a half season each. Uh-huh. But that just didn't work out with our new development.
And ALE is the Antarctic Logistics and Expeditions Company that runs Union Glacier.
Correct, yes.
So the last question, if you wanted to give a message to the world about wild areas, you know, Antarctica is one of the last wild places on the surface of the planet. You know, there's also the wild at the top of the mountains. Do you have a message about protecting the wild?
I think we've never been more kind of mindful of, you know, how precious the environment is, what it gives us in return. So it is wonderful to visit these places and get that experience, but, you know, do so responsibly, do so with compassion, and then tell others about it. You know, there's really no point going to these places if we don't tell others how precious they are and how wonderful they are.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Rob. I know you've got a million other things to accomplish today, so I'm grateful for the time that you've spent with us. And on behalf of everyone at NTT Data and around the world, we wish you, Rob Swan, Barney, and Kyle O'Donohue, good luck and Godspeed.
Thanks very much, Dan. Pleasure talking to you.
Next up, here's Barney Swan, the 28-year-old son of Robert Swan and co-founder of Climate Force.
You're welcome, Barney.
It's great to be back with you, Dan. It's slight juxtaposition since being in Laguna Beach, pretty much as direct opposite of where we're sitting now, currently 1,000 kilometers on top of a glacier that's slowly working its way down to the ocean. So what a lovely transition.
It is indeed. Now it has been interesting to see the similarities between liquid water and frozen water. When looking at it, some of the glacier scenes, it really does look like Laguna Beach at high noon. Beyond the glaciers, the most important thing here is the Undaunted Expedition, which originally was scheduled to begin officially on December 26th, Boxing Day. That was the plan, to fly out to your starting point. But we got news today that plans have changed. Can you share what's up there?
Well, I think Santa's got a bit of a busy schedule, clearly, and unfortunately we have to leave tomorrow at noon, the day before Christmas, which weather is just the ultimate decider of everything down in Antarctica. You can have the best laid plans, it will get switched in a heartbeat down here, depending on the visibility and the wind and indeed the cold. So we're just having to adapt and heading a couple of days earlier, which is a bit of a bummer to not have Christmas with both new and old friends, but it's just a reality of expedition life. You are at the mercy of higher forces than one's own desires.
Right. And I should have told the audience that we're actually recording this on December 23rd, so you've lost about 48 hours of planning and preparation time. What does that do, aside from creating stress? How does that change things for you if you lose 48 hours?
We've gained 48 hours in a funny sort of way. So as long as we have more food, it gives us more time on ice. So it just depends if you're a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of fella or lass. But I think in this situation, it will give us more time on ice to get organized. And hopefully we can have Christmas maybe doing a couple of miles.
I don't know if you can hear it on the audio, but there is a Twin Otter plane that's taking off. We'll be listening for that sound tomorrow when it has the Undaunted Expedition team with it. So tomorrow about noon is the planned takeoff time to go to your starting point. What do you expect to do once you step off the plane? What are the first things that you're going to do?
Well, I think just keeping that. Again, I'm not sure if you can hear on the radio, but my father's hollering to Kyle about some sort of final gear check.
And right.
It's a lot of last-minute shuffling, and it doesn't matter if you're the likes of Rob Smith, who will be joining us on this expedition, guiding us. Amazing man. You know, he's climbed K2 twice, Everest 6 times. You know, amazing, amazing. Just leader and pioneer and guide. And even him will be doing his final checks. You know, someone who's been that experienced. even the Rob Smiths of the world still have that importance to double check everything. So I think fundamentally when we land, it's make sure you have the system in place to make it all smooth. So we'll probably land, pick up tent, and obviously we're going to like 10,000-11,000 feet, so we've also just got to be wary not to overdo it and get headaches and feel a bit sick from the altitude.
So you're going from about 2,000 feet above sea level
to 10,000-11,000
to 10,000-11,000 feet in a day.
Yep. And that's fine, but you just don't want to overdo it, and just have a good rest, drink lots of water, and it'll be Christmas Eve when we arrive. So yeah, we'll wake up to Christmas Day, which is quite surreal to wake up to Christmas Day on the largest expanse of ice on our beautiful planet
and the Antarctic plateau.
Yeah, and it's quite a thing.
When everything is white, glimmering silver white, and stillness fills the night, it's Christmas, a winter wonderland. A snowball in each hand. Take me away, Christmas Day.
Quite a thing out there, Dan. It's definitely, I've been lucky enough to sail across the South Atlantic and be in caves and climb many beautiful mountains, and it's a very ethereal place out on the plateau. So it does take a moment to acclimatize to that.
Well, I've only been in Union Glacier for 4 or 5 days now, and one thing I learned very quickly is that Antarctica strips you of your vanity, and it demands your respect. Mm-hmm. We've done some hikes when we weren't doing recording or preparing employee communications, and even just a 2 or 3 kilometer hike wore me out. From your point, you will continue climbing uphill, is that correct?
A little bit. Just a little bit? Going up the dome a little bit, okay. I think. But it's interesting that the altitude actually flux down there, because the Earth isn't a perfect sphere. It's more like an American football a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it actually buckles the altitude a little bit down there. So it actually fluctuates. It's not a fixed altitude like Everest where it's fixed. It actually goes up and down a little bit, I think, to a variation of about 1,000+ feet, which is pretty interesting. Because even Scott back in the day, they couldn't figure out why the boiling point was changing. And now they know it's because the atmosphere is literally buckling down there. I think one thing I'm really excited about down there is just the silence. There's a silence here that is available in other places around the world, but out on the plateau especially, it's just eerie with no mountains and no anything. It's just this kind of screaming silence almost, especially when the wind isn't there. You can hear the tinnitus in your ear just ringing, and so I'm excited for that, which is a really nice canvas to just contemplate. I think for me especially, what virtue I really want to explore in this new year. I'm 28, going to be 29 in July the 6th next year, so I think right now is a very poignant time in my career, in my development, and I think just having a fresh canvas moment of just zooming out and exploring the micro and macro of who I am, where I'm going, and just that side by side of really supporting my father. I respect him more so than I ever have, whether it's his grind of just being able to sit behind a computer for 10 hours and smash out emails, or to be the first person stupid enough to ski to the North and South Pole, or various other mad things he's done, cycling around India and talking with tens of thousands of students, and just so many momentums that have sustained him. Seeing him get older is challenging. I don't like seeing his mobility not quite what it used to be, and sometimes that is hard, but at the same time having that moment to really connect with him in a place that has defined both of our lives now. This is my 11th trip to Antarctica, which is obscene really when you think about it, and only 28 have been down here 11 times now, and just to have that reconnect to him and also myself and just where I fit into the bigger system of our beautiful planet that is so, so in need of reform and inspiration and acknowledgement.
You were speaking about your father, and I wanted to ask, as the two of you are out there, accompanied by Kyle O'Donoghue, who is quite the adventurer himself, and Rob Smith, who's a champion in every sense of the word. I've spoken with him. But as the two of you are out there, what sort of features will you be dealing with, geographic features that might pose challenges? And then also, while you're out there, how are you going to pass the time in your mind as you are walking through these features?
Yeah, I think the...
And let me say, you've already been to the South Pole twice. You had a 600-mile walk and you've had a 300-mile walk, so you do know what to expect out there.
Mountains of mind are always harder. the ice and the cold, which I think, you know, my feet are a challenge. They get cold because I got frostbite in 2017-18. Like, keeping my feet warm is a challenge, but fundamentally the wind will freeze your skin off your face if you allow it to. So the wind is fundamentally the biggest challenge out there.
And that's one geographic feature, is that the wind is always in your face. When you're walking to the South Pole, the wind is coming from the South Pole.
Yep, coming off the domes there, straight into your face. And also just blistering, like making sure your lips don't turn to bacon lips and that you don't hurt your eyes. You also got to keep your eyes protected. The UV is very strong. But fundamentally, for me, I'm really wanting to have a good spirit. And I know I will have moments of being in pain. And I think just how do you keep a good spirit within that? And I was having a lovely chat with Eli last night, who's an amazing accomplished mountaineer. And
he's one of the field guides here at Needham
really
Glacier.
Hell of a good man. And, you know, he's like, when people are whinging and to me up Mount Vincent or Denali, oh, it's cold. It's like, oh, well, it was in the brochure.
You signed up for it.
You don't come down to the South Pole unless you are fully aware of what minus 40 can do to one's body. But keeping that spirit alive and really positive is critical. And just to learn a lot, you know, like I've only met Rob, you know, 6-7 days ago.
Rob Smith, yeah.
Yeah. I already know that I trust and that I really respect that man's character and integrity and way of life. And so to have the opportunity to spend that with Kyle, who I love dearly, as a, you know, I've been to his wedding, I've seen his little bub grow up. And you know, I've known Carl for over 10 years, and obviously my dad, who's been there since the wee beginnings of it all, having that opportunity to inquire within oneself, but to learn a lot from three remarkable men, and how I want to step up my virtue as a young man.
My understanding is you're planning about 6 hours of actual walking per day, a relatively moderate pace.
I think we're going to shoot for about 7-8 nautical miles a day, and the flow is, which is always my least favorite moment, is waking up in the morning. I definitely enjoy the sleeping bag.
But your father has mentioned that.
Yeah, a few times. He's definitely a morning person. Getting up in the morning, starting the stove, making the hot water, making breakfast, having your coffee, doing the ablution run quickly, packing up the tent, which is hard if it's windy. You don't want to lose anything. Keeping organized, keeping all the systems in place, all of the different bags for different things, making sure you just super organized, because it is easy if you're cold, your hands are numb, and you just rush. And you know, for all those who are listening, we're currently in Dan's tent, which is something of a marvel of organization, and that's really what you need is just that really organized,
right,
measured, organized approach to packing down the tent, and then skiing for an hour, taking a 10-minute break, skiing for another hour, doing that 6-7 times, and then again putting the tent out, keeping organized, keeping steady, and just not rushing. You know, I think that's a big thing that I'm encouraging Dad and myself, is just not to rush and trip over something and hit your head on the sled or whatever. All it takes is one trip over shovel and you hurt your ankle, and suddenly the next 3 days is going to suck. So just being really measured, slow paced, and really organized. I'm going to take the Dan Smith approach to my tent etiquette on this expedition, and everything's going to be very very in place and organized.
I've been teased about the order of my tent.
Marvel, not teased.
It's interesting that you talk about not losing something. I experienced the katabatic winds to a degree here on some of the walks, and I mean, they are incredibly powerful, not just blisteringly cold, but powerful. And I was using pulling out one of my mics to do a short interview with one of the field guides, and the little foam top that you protects you from wind slipped away, and it was gone. And I jogged at full tilt in my Frankenstein polar boots until I did a face plant, and there was just no way to catch it. It was gone.
Mm-hmm. And if that's your main mittens, you're in a bit of trouble.
Right.
So the wind really has to be respected. I heard a scary story of someone doing a kiting expedition, and they were fiddling with something or going to the lavatory, doing a little pee break or something, and they left their kite on the ground, and a big gust came out, and then suddenly their sled, with everything in it, and they're not in their puffy jacket and no radio, no anything, their sled starts flying away. Not flying, but the kite goes up, and the sled's
and
going.
Their sled goes with it.
Like 2-3 kilometers away, it stopped. So he's like running after his entire life.
Do you have any parting thoughts that you would like to share with the world? We're going to do our best to get this podcast out while you're out on the Antarctic Plateau.
That I can't speak for anyone else, but I truly acknowledge that wherever you're listening, and I appreciate you getting to, at the end of this conversation, that, I really on a personal level acknowledge that it is a huge privilege to be in such a place, and that we came down on a fuel that wasn't running on rainbow fuel, and I'm wearing a puffy jacket that's covered in duck feathers or whatever, geese feathers. Like, I'm not wearing a synthetic puffy jacket right now. Like, I have an animal that is keeping me warm, and all of the impact that's made this happen, I do acknowledge that, almost to the point of it hurting sometimes, but I am doing everything I can to give back so much more than I'm taking. But I do acknowledge the privilege and also the hypocrisy to an extent of being a passionate environmentalist and someone who's literally thrown out their back planting thousands of trees this last 6 months, and then to come and sit on a plane and burn some emissions to get down here. But at the same time, I am very confident that between engaging and getting to know such a lovely man such as yourself and the Kohler team and Odyssey and just our little impact alone, and I am very positive that we're gonna not just 100x but 1000x the positive impact from having this conversation, having a very privileged right to be sitting on this glacier right now and having this conversation.
Barney, thank you so much. Good luck and Godspeed.
Thank you, sir.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old unsigned?
Finally, I asked Kyle for any parting words just a few minutes before the team boarded their plane. Here's what he said.
Any final words?
Do you have any parting comments as they load the plane?
Parting comments? Well, it's always nice to get to this point because preparations can drive you a little crazy, so this is always a great moment to get on the plane and look down and start to get your mind ready.
Right, understood. Yeah. Good luck and Godspeed. You have many things to think about, so
thank you.
And now it's time once again for Cold Hard Facts. You might have noticed a new sound effect for this portion of the show. That's actually the sound of a stiff Antarctic wind blowing through Union Glacier Camp in December. I hope you like it, because I nearly froze my fingers off trying to get it. Now here's a frozen fact for you. The Southern Ocean surrounds Antarctica and is home to the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, or ACC. ACC is important because it's the Earth's strongest ocean current. It flows around the entirety of the continent, extending from the surface to the bottom of the ocean. It simultaneously connects the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans while preventing warmer waters from reaching Antarctica, thus keeping the frozen continent frozen, at least for now. Well, my friends, another episode has come to a close, but we'll soon be sharing conversations with other guests at Union Glacier Camp, and we'll broaden our scope to explore a business perspective about Antarctic adventuring, as well as global sustainability. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time for Undaunted with Robert Swan and NTT Data. Bye, folks.